You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King. We're here with Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn of the 7th District of Tennessee. And Marsha, you came into Congress with me, elected in 2002, and swore
into
office.
The greatest freshman class going.
That outstanding freshman class that we have that's bonded together to slow this growth in government and provide more freedom to people. And representing that 7th District in Tennessee, and we gave you a little bluegrass music to start this out with just to say welcome to the Iowa program, Marsha.
Well, I love that. I tell you, you've got the right kind of music happening there. Sounds good.
Well, thank you. And one day I want to go down and visit that portion of Tennessee so I can get a better feel for it. But that's the best we can do for you today. And I really appreciate you joining us and having an opportunity to have a conversation about a number of things that have crossed by in front of us. But first, I'd like to have the listeners get to learn a little about you and remind them that you came into Council Bluffs last fall and made a good whistle stop there or two or three across the district, and positive reputation was earned, and that it helped me out in my election. But also what I noticed is that the folks there were looking for somebody for president, and some were thinking Hillary, but a lot of them said Marsha Blackburn is going to be the person I'm for.
Well, I appreciate that so very much, and I'll be happy to come back to Iowa anytime that you need me to come out there. And what a place it's going to be, my goodness. 07, 08, you guys are going to have all y'all, as we like to say, are going to have a lot of action going on out there in Iowa. And Steve, one of the things you were just kind of touching on there, I think that people are looking for maybe a non-traditional leadership as they look at who they want for president this year. But they want it to be good, solid, conservative leadership. America is a center-right country, and people like your constituents in Iowa and my constituents in Tennessee believe in faith, family, freedom, hope, and opportunity. And when we're here in Congress working, they want to make certain that the votes we cast are going to be true to those values that they hold.
And it's true, and the people in Iowa and the people in Tennessee share those values, and they live those values on a daily basis.
Every day.
What I see is that it's one thing to speak in platitudes, and it's another to live them. And I think you'll share this with me, that it is so valuable for me to go back to the district and put my feet on real soil from which grows the wealth of this nation and the world, and look real people in the eye that are out there making a living every day. And it's the antidote to Potomac fever. And the other side of that is, inside this beltway, you have people that believe they have the answers to everything. Is that similar in Tennessee?
Oh, you know, that is so very, very true. And I just look at some of the people with their thoughts up here and some of the special interest groups. And then when I go home, how amazing it is to hear my constituents. You know, and illegal immigration is one of those issues that always comes up. They cannot figure out how in the world people in Washington, D.C. could support illegal immigration when it goes against so many of our founding principles and our beliefs, and it goes against pursuit of the American dream.
Well, and you've been one that's joined me in this and standing up for the rule of law and calling to stop the bleeding at the border and control this in the workplace. And, you know,
let me correct that there. I think I've been kind of standing behind your leadership, and I think your constituents need to know that you are one of those that has been on the point of the spear in this issue, and your work at Immigration Subcommittee, your work in the Immigration Reform Caucus have made you a national leader on this issue. And I think one of the reasons that has happened is because your constituents are right there with you. You all have the same belief on this, and you're not voting one thing in Washington and saying something different at home, and it shows.
Well, Marsha Blackburn, I thank you so much for your generosity for those comments, and I won't disagree with them, except to say that I know you stood there with me, and you didn't have to hesitate. You didn't have to take the temperature.
No,
you didn't put your finger into the wind.
Yeah.
It's a conviction that's born out of who you are, and a conviction
sure.
that's supported by your constituents in Tennessee as
You're
well.
You're right. Right, they are. And my constituents have, so many of my constituents are veterans. And as one of my veterans says, every time he sees me, I fought to be certain that we stay a free, secure, and sovereign nation. And I expect you to go to D.C. and fight to be sure that we stay a secure, free, and sovereign nation. And I've got about 60,000 veterans in my district. And you know what is so amazing is this Senate immigration bill, you know, the current, I guess you would say, the current adaptation that is currently floating around. I haven't gotten any calls supporting that. People in my district don't like this, and they don't know, they've not read every single word of it. They know what is included in the bill, and they know that it is wrong to make a protected class of those that have broken the rule of law and have broken the law to come into this country. They know that it is wrong for them to get citizenship and move ahead of people in the queue when people have been in that queue legally going through the process for years. And they know that it is wrong to give somebody amnesty and to give them the rewards and the benefits for coming here illegally entering, illegally working, illegally laying down roots.
That's almost exactly the definition that I finally sat down and had to pen for the meaning of the word amnesty. And you can look it up a lot of places. The administration's definition is different than the one that the American people understand.
That's exactly right.
And so I drafted a piece, and I'm going to put this down, and then I'm going to repeat it over and over again until someone can debate me off of the point. But to grant amnesty is to pardon immigration lawbreakers and reward them with the objective of their crime. Some come for jobs, some come for other reasons, some come to live in the shadows. And that's the objective of their crime. And it seems as though the echo chamber of the Senate and the White House are determined to grant them what they think their objective is, and as if the objective were citizenship for everyone who comes here, but to pardon them for the violation of their crimes. And that says to everyone, all right, just ignore American law. When the ones that are difficult to enforce, if there are enough lawbreakers, you can just defy a law, and sooner or later they will amend the law to accommodate your violations of it. That undermines and weakens what I call the most essential pillar of American exceptionalism, and that's the rule of law.
Well, you're precisely right, and the American people are not going to sit still and stand for that. And I, quite frankly, I am so thrilled that my district in Tennessee is comprised of people that love this country enough that they are standing up and are looking the Senate in the face and saying, there is no way we're going to let you get by with this. And I just love the fact that we are seeing a rebirth of the love of what this country stands for and a love of freedom by people who have fought for it, people who have defended this country, people who know what it means to be an American and to pursue opportunity. And they know that if you start handing out amnesty and you cheapen the value of that, that it is going to cheapen it to every citizen and everyone who would choose to be a citizen. I was in the Garden Center a couple of weekends ago. Cute story, quick story. I'll make it very, very short.
The price is
but
right
I have
on this
to tell
microphone.
You, I have to tell you this cute little story. You'll appreciate it because you know that I'm a gardener. I know you do a lot of your best thinking on the back of your old tractor. I've heard those stories, Steve. And I had run to the garden center to pick up some things, and this woman, lovely lady, approached me and asked if I was her representative, and I identified that I was, and she was joined then by her husband, who was pushing two children in a cart. These were two individuals who had immigrated to the U.S. out of the old Soviet bloc. They spent a period of about 12 years getting sponsors and working multiple jobs. Her husband said sometimes as many as three jobs, going through the process of becoming a permanent resident and getting their citizenship and all the naturalization process, had gotten their citizenship, then had decided to start their family, had these two little toddlers, as I said, and then had finally owned their piece of America. They bought a house. And they were devastated with the idea that we may give amnesty to individuals who would not know the joy of triumph of going through this process and achieving and earning that citizenship. And she was so disappointed that that was even being considered. And I told her that she just really buoyed me and encouraged me to come back with a stronger resolve than ever to fight against amnesty and to be certain that the first thing we do is to secure the border.
Because, but their sense is, and which I agree with, is that to grant amnesty to others cheapens the value of her earned citizenship, her husband's
That's right.
earned citizenship, and then the legacy that they would leave for their children.
That's exactly right. And she said, you know, let me ask you this. She said, you're talking about letting people pay just a little bit of back taxes and $5,000. She said, my goodness, $5,000 doesn't even begin to touch it. So would there be reparations for those of us that have gone through the legal immigration process
since
86? Would there be some type of making us whole for the time and the money that we have spent on this? Would we recoup something? So I think this Pandora's box of a bill that is in the Senate is going to open a lot of questions up. You know, we're hearing that there may be class action lawsuits filed on behalf of those that are in the queue waiting to come into the country.
This is an opportunity, and I think across there is you have 60,000 veterans in your district, and they fought for something. And
yes.
that was the defend the Constitution, the freedom, the rule of law, our liberty, the whole list of things that are the American dream. And one of the ways that civilians, people that have not put on a uniform and defended their country that way, can defend those same values is to speak up and talk to their senators, talk
yes.
to their representatives. And it isn't just good enough anymore to send an email and click send on it. You really need to go to their office. You need to get on the telephone. You need to give them an experience that's a little bit more than just counting an email, something a little bit emotional so that they understand how important this is to the American people. And if enough people do that, they're serving their country. They're helping provide for a positive destiny for America, and they're helping to convince their senators and their members of Congress on the side of this thing that you and I are.
You know, that is so true. And one of the things that we have to remember is those of us who are for putting up a border fence, and we are for protecting the legal immigration process, we have to win this battle every single time. Those that are pro-amnesty only have to win one vote, and they have to win it once.
That's right. It's like a bond issue.
Yeah.
They keep bringing it back over and over
again.
That's
right, until they think they can wear you down. So the American people, every time they kill that bill in the Senate, every time they kill an amnesty provision, that is another victory for them. And we have to remember, we have to do it day in and day out.
It takes the American people to do it. And
yes, it
and,
does.
And as I watch what's going on here, too, I used to believe that when I first went into public life more than a decade ago, that if I were just right on principle, I would make that argument to my colleagues, and sooner or later, the votes would be lined up to do the right thing. And now I'm quite a bit more cynical about that, and I recognize that some people are guided by principle, but generally they already have arrived at the position. And then there are those who make up their mind depending upon what their constituents say and how to check the waters and test the
yes.
wind, so to speak. And then there are those who are influenced by other things, and I don't even want to utter what that is. But there are a lot of forces at play here that set public policy. Empirical data and studies, principled decisions and opinions, political positions and opinions, the lobby, the whole gamut go into this decision-making process to some degree or another with each different senator or member of Congress. So it's important to weigh in any way that you can if you care and care enough to do so.
That's very true. And I think that as we go through the summer and into the fall, we are going to see this issue played out. We also have the anchor baby issue, the birthright citizenship issue and the chain migration issue that are part of the immigration process. And you and I have done a good bit of work on the employer verification issue, making certain that that is addressed, I feel like. And I've had a bill that you've supported, and I always support your bills, too. But we certainly believe that doing this incrementally is going to get us somewhere. Doing this, trying to do it comprehensively, is just another tactic for trying to stall and do nothing. But making certain that employers use the basic pilot program to be certain they know who is working with them. And then you've supported a bill I have, H.R. 1314, commonly known as the No Visa Without a Visa bill. But officially known as the Photo ID Security Act, that would require government-issued photo ID, basically tamper-proof ID, as we have it. Well,
Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, we have brought a whole series of solutions to this problem. We haven't really listed them all here in the few minutes that we've had.
Are we already out of time?
We are past out of time.
But oh, my goodness gracious.
But I do want to say, at the wrap-up of this, thanks so very much for joining us here today. And you know that you're welcome in Iowa anytime. We'd look forward to seeing you, and I hope I can reciprocate someday.
I'll be there. Thanks.
Thanks, and thanks for listening to Conversations with Congressman King.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.